SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Nice, breezy morning here in upstate New York. I imagine over at Saratoga at the Oklahoma, the training in full swing, of course, really it's got to be 6 weeks now, and this is one of those mornings the horses love. The over-under, 2.5 on loose horses. Nothing like a chilly morning. It was cold this morning. It was in the 40s starting the morning, but it's getting there. Slow but sure, and the weekend, of course, in Baltimore went a long way toward enjoying spring racing. We start to get excited about Belmont and everything coming in a couple of weeks. Started to figure out the next 2 weeks for us here, and then down to Long Island, and looking ahead at the weekend. Wednesday draws, got a nice mixed bag this weekend. A little bit of everything, including Louisiana. They got the Legends at Evangeline, and nice smattering of graded stakes, the Daytona and the Triple Bend at Santa Anita. Seemingly under fire again. You can't, it's obvious that the meet, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much spacing there is, it seems, suddenly, between incidents. The assumption somehow is that there wasn't going to be any more. There wasn't going to be any training incidents or any racing injuries or fatalities. That's the big problem that is basically part of what has transpired. The microscope that somehow puts it in people's heads that if a horse after a month's worth of racing and training, if you get one that goes wrong, well, that's, these things are continuing. Well, I don't know how you mollify those kinds of assumptions and that kind of pressure. So there's a 4 weekends remaining before the scene shifts to Los Al and ahead of Del Mar. But the attention and the focus is just so acute. We'll touch on the. You had two expulsions from Santa Anita, both Mike Pender and Marcelo Polanco, asked to vacate stalls, and Polanco involved with the horse that that broke a shoulder, and the situation there was that one of Paulo Lobo's exercise riders owns the horse, and Polanco doing the favor to let him operate under Polanco's shed. For Mike Pender, a horse that didn't pass muster, he wanted to enter, and then apparently wanted to enter it at Golden Gate, and management deciding that warrants having stalls taken away. It's an impossible situation that everyone has to think three times about everything that they're doing under this kind of examination. And you can't. There's not going to be any missteps that are going to go unaddressed. Doing favors like Polanco is doing in that case, that it's not going to work. Everybody's going to have to be dot every I, cross every T. And as we discussed during the earlier, right in the midst of the problems earlier this winter at Santa Anita, everybody has to watch just so carefully, and no horse can go postward and be entered if there's any concerns or questions, period. It's not under those conditions and under that scrutiny. So I saw some quotes from a story that Mark Glatt said, and Mark said, if we know what the conditions are, horsemen will adjust, and that's true. But certain areas that you wouldn't think, including this situation that unfolded with Polanco, that you think you're doing a favor, there's none of that is. That's a different era, I guess. So we also, I suppose, since we started in this direction, the HBO Real Sports segment that everyone knew was coming because several people had been contacted about interviews, and it essentially was a rehash of what they did in 2008. There was nothing really new or any revelation in the HBO segment. In fact, they clearly were a little hard pressed, actually, it seems, to find new material, because they went to the vault to pull out as much of the 2008 segment as they possibly could, about slaughter, the slaughter pipeline. And the impression that that they're trying to deliver is that very little has been accomplished or very little has been changed. And everybody actually that is close to this topic knows that that's not true. People that that are looking at some of this for the first time, or certainly the people that are eager to paint as negative a picture as they possibly can about the industry, they will claim. But everybody that's close to it on racetracks where there has been redoubled and constant efforts to prevent horses from slipping into into the kill pen pipeline, and the numbers that they were quoting, they're basically conflating all breeds that end up going through the slaughter system, And the public isn't going to differentiate between quarter horses and thoroughbreds. They have no idea. So there's no argument to make on that front. I mean, the only thing to do is continue to work as hard as possible, and that's been going on a going basis, no matter what. Certain outlets that are trying to paint a certain picture. Some of it is the desire to pass this Horse Racing Integrity Act, which it certainly isn't going to address anything, doesn't address anything on those areas, on slaughter issue. It's very obvious, who's on what side and who's on in whose pocket, frankly, when it comes to that discussion. So very easy to distort information and twist. So the people that care the most are the ones that are working the hardest. And from what I understand, there was no real interest on the part of Real Sports to hear any counterbalance at all. Anybody that wanted to talk about the last 10 years and the progress that's been made in protecting horses when they come off the track, they didn't want to hear that. They wanted to do as much damage as possible, and that's what they did. So good for them. Congratulations. Anybody that's got their mind made up already only gets it reinforced. So I and anybody who really knows the truth knows that work goes into this on a going basis, and it's actually insulting to the people at racetracks and the aftercare system. It's an insult to them that their voice wasn't presented, and whether it was Purple Haze up at Finger Lakes, turning for home at Philadelphia, wherever. And I will pull out. This came up during the Louisiana situation earlier in the winter. I'll pull up the pieces that Glennie Kane Oakford wrote, because Glennie was tracking this and she was handling it for the forum at the time. So if you have people that, if you're involved in the industry and people are saying to you, oh, I saw the terrible HBO, you can say, well, that's an amplification of old news and reinforcement of a certain dialogue that isn't accurate. I mean, that's much more to say. They also were pulling out as many old graphic images as they could find. Meanwhile, we press on and look forward to conversations today with Sid Fernando, top of hour two. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And I got about three things for Sid. We got sales coverage, which was on yesterday. It was crazy all of a sudden, the second day of the Mid-Atlantic sale. But we got to talk. I was kind of saving it yesterday for Sid. Jumpstart on Sunday. Colitis, age of 20. He was at New Bolton for treatment, and they couldn't save him. And of course, he stood at Northview and had been just an absolute steady success in the Mid-Atlantic region. Son of AP Indy, out of the Stormcat Mayor, steady cat. 69 stake winners so far. There'll be more. 24 graded or group winners. He started at Overbrook, actually. Three millionaires. Samantha Siegel's rail trip. Prayer for Relief and Pants on Fire were his millionaires. He also shuttled to Argentina. And you see, if you watch South American racing, you see tons of jump starts. Three South American champions in his career as a stallion. And, of course, D-Wayne trained him. He was a good, precocious horse. Jumpstart. And he will he will be in pedigrees in the Mid-Atlantic for a long time. A lot of Maryland and Pennsylvania bred dams are going to have Jumpstart. There's going to be a lot of that. We'll go through some of the sales results later. A $1.8 million filly. Ted yesterday, Into Mischief, had a good day one. Well, he had a pretty good day two. $1.8 million filly that Bobby Dodd and Brad Grady pinhooked. Brad Grady will join us in hour three. Pete Fornitzel, though, starts us off next. He had a fun weekend. And we'll also talk some Indiana action with Bill Downs this hour. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You going to the party on Saturday? She asked us if I didn't know. See, ever since I saw you on the back of some guy's bicycle, well, I've been feeling kind of so-so. So you don't act so surprised, got that look in your light blue eyes. Yeah, I've been watching the movie all
1, Cayucas. I love this song. High School Lover. Waiting for Pete. And while we wait, I'll give you a little bit more about some of these winners from yesterday's sale. Unbelievable. Pete's here. Pete's here. Okay. We'll save the more sales results, including Larry Best, who just can't keep his hand down. Larry, $850 yesterday for a Colonel John. And, of course, Colonel John is now plying his trade in Korea. But this colt was a good-looking colt. They actually came with a name, and it's actually a good name, Vegas Strong. We'll see if Larry keeps the name, but that was the second biggest number. The $1.8 million for the Into Mischief filly that we'll talk about with Brad Grady, it happens to be a record, and this sale continues, this Mid-Atlantic sale, because there's buyers from all over the place. It's a real mixed bag, and you got a lot of regional stallion-type products, Pennsylvania, New York, Maryland, etc., as well as Florida and Kentucky. So you get a little bit of everything, and there's a bunch of confluences going on in this sale that I want to talk about with Sid later, including the fact that the racetrack at Timonium Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because of the rain from the weekend and Monday, the track, as it happens, got faster as the week went on. And I want to go back and look. It's amazing how the sales figures are just so tied to the Breeze Show result. And I got a feeling the horses that breezed day one when the track was slow, you're going to end up seeing some bargains, because I think the eighths and the quarters were a little skewed by that track. So we'll see. Pete, I'll tell you what, you have to have had a good time, even though I never saw you. The 10 strike team, if there was a winner that didn't get a photo, it was Team 10 Strike. They were like crazed. I made the assessment the other day with Brad Cox that there might still be some of the partners in the infield from
they
Saturday.
They never went back to Arkansas.
No,
they've actually left. What a great story indeed. Homegrown partnership, 10 Strike Racing, and they traveled in force. I was fortunate enough to be with them. I had a little hiccup with my credential, Steve. So what happened there is I was supposed to be there, and my credential got me where I was. But for some reason, at every point, and there were several of them, I was actually impressed with the security. But whatever the wristband they gave me or whatever didn't work. So after I bluffed my way through the third checkpoint, I decided I was just going to sit in the tent. So a lot of people I was meant to reach out to, you, Teresa Jarrow, I was meant to meet up with, and was basically that plan went out the window after I saw this credential situation, and I just posted up in that little couch in the 10 strike tent where I'm sort of embarrassingly on display throughout Marshall Graham's interview with Gabby Gaudette. But I really didn't do much moving. I did not get to see the full glory of Team 10 Strike in the infield, but it was amazing. I mean, it was a strong party 1 minute, and then the next minute there were three people in there. They were all out there. It was great.
Well, it just so happened that we were – with Tina and I were with Charlotte Weber and Ginny and the Win-Win-Win team, who, of course, was the 13. So he was at the end of the saddling area out on the turf course. And then he had to wait. He had to go down to the end, up the stretch, basically, to get in line to then get on the racetrack. And so everybody from the 12, everybody basically followed their horse, and so they all kind of came around. Some people went back across the racetrack, and others kind of stayed, including Marshall and Jack and everybody. And the next thing I knew, they were right basically behind us, and they were so excited, and so that you could just see the look on everybody's face. And then to have him run the race that he did, which was just exceptional. I mean, to cut out those fractions and turn away. I mean, you see the horses that tried to stay with him, ended up basically, other than Bodie Express, the others that tried to run with him ended up 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Yeah, it was a very impressive performance, and there's a bright future, some decisions to make about where to go next, and I'm very excited to see if there might be another one of the mid-state derbies coming up, or if they're going to look for Saratoga or Monmouth or what they're going to do. But they've got a good one. That horse is excellent. And it was even after it was a celebratory feeling. I think they obviously couldn't have been more pleased. Anybody who really understands racing understands that there is such a thing as a fourth that's much more of a win than that. And I think that's what you saw with Warrior's Charge and 10 Strike Racing on Saturday in the Preakness.
Yeah, other anecdotes and other impressions. We talked on Friday with you and Jonathan. We had a fun visit, and you were doing noble work at the soup kitchen, and then zipped down.
It was fun to get to talk to you guys for a minute, and especially fun that I got to tell that many more people about my head-to-head bet with JK, with War of Will and Improbable. I'd say I won that one in pretty good style.
I love it. Yeah, right? That's anybody that keyed off of War of Will should have done well, although, as we discussed the last couple of days in terms of ticket building, the element of having Everfast run second.
That nose cost me a lot. Obviously, I was fine in the doubles, but the Everfast nose. And then, you know, looking back at it and thinking about how little it would have taken to include in the underneath spot, I did second guess, but that's just hindsight. The other thing I remember talking about with you on Friday, Steve, was that there was a little bit of a spidey sense maybe something weird is going to happen on this board. And to me, the thing that was weird was what is the price that War of Will was. I just figured most horses that have that kind of noticeable trouble, like War of Will did in the Derby, the market goes the other way and hammers them into oblivion. And I expected him to be 5-2. And that was a real surprise and actually helped me out because I thinking that they would be both buried. I said this on air, maybe on this show, and certainly over on the In the Money Players podcast. One of my instincts was to go against the Derby horses, thinking they'd be overbet. But fortunately for me, that at 6-1 or whatever he ended up going off at, I was smart enough to at least get some money back in those doubles, even though Everfast made it made those exacta bets not worth very much.
Well, and it. You're absolutely right that you would think that a horse second off ostensibly a layoff, I mean an extensive layoff, because the Louisiana Derby effort was not much more than you know a workout, given that Gaffalione kind of sensed the issue and never really asked him for serious run. He basically galloped around for a mile and an eighth. So it's a glorified workout, and then the 6 weeks to the Derby where no matter what you think of the incident and the as Mark Cassie and I laughed on Sunday as Mark and I were texting back and forth as I was waiting for the figure. It's funny. I sent him the 100 figure, which showed up as the original number, and then Andy Beyer tweaked it to a 99. And so Mark wrote back, he goes, is that the length that Andy thought we lost in the Derby from the incident? He said he's still deducting a length for us. That made me laugh. But no matter what you thought of how much punch he had post scrum, and it was not hard to project that he should have been that much more prepared and that much tighter for Saturday. I mean, it made plenty of sense that this was the time, to get him.
It was a real surprise to me that he got ignored. I mean, I think it's a testament to how interesting some of the other runners were, some of the runners who hadn't run in the Derby. But markets are funny like that, and as much as on radio shows and podcasts, we have to be selection-oriented. It's not interesting radio to come up for me to come on a show or you to on your show to run through five horses you might bet and name the price at which they should be a bet. But at the same time, in your betting, that's kind of exactly what you should be doing all the
sure.
time. It all keys off of that. So it puts pundits, I think, in a funny place sometimes where we all want to make our pick and stick with our pick, but circumstances dictate if you want to make money. That's not the approach. You can't be. You can do that on the air, and when it comes to betting, you know, I'm always going to be, you know, except in extreme circumstances, including horses that I talk about on the show. But you've got to be in this game. You got to be a bit more nimble and react to what the market does, because it does strange things sometimes.
Well, and this was what was funny. There was another thing at play too, Pete. I think thinking about it. In retrospect, the overnight odds and even the odds early in the afternoon, and Dave Joseph was sending out, you know, every few hours, and as well as you know, various media members were sending out snapshots of the Preakness board through the day, but that board was not a commingled; those were not commingled odds. And what's funny about it is they were very much reflective of the way things ended up. And that always seems to be the case. Like we talk at Derby, how on Friday, those early Derby odds by about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and there may only be a few hundred thousand in the pool, but the odds end up being fairly accurate. They don't fluctuate that much ultimately when you get to post time. And so, you know, I think people were watching that board and thinking, okay, well, these odds are going to change once, you know, once the word got out that those were like track money odds. I think people thought, well, the odds will change when they commingle post Dixie. And people were also, I was looking at the will pays on the 2 day, you know, the Black Eyed Susan, Preakness double. So there was real confusion, and I just think the public, you know, the public was sort of anti. They tried to go anti Derby, and were trying to scare up. You know, I tabbed always mining, and you had the Owendale camp, which was not inaccurate. The one that I didn't get, and I don't want Mark Hennig to think that. You know, I'm singling him out. I did not get the Bourbon War. There was this tidal wave of, oh, it's Bourbon War. This is, I'm like, I didn't get that. I didn't understand it.
The morning line, I think, I never thought the 12-1 would materialize, but I do think it plants in your the idea of trying to get a horse who had license to be the best closer, had license to maybe get a better trip with the blinkers. I get liking the horse. I don't get liking the horse at the price he went off at. And that is one where I pretty much will admit I think I stubbornly with because I had mentioned as probably mentioned him as my second choice in a lot of the media stuff I did. But that was the perfect example of how the sixth ended up materializing on War Will was what did Bourbon War going off at? I mean, it was a short number, wasn't it?
It was like I got it here. It was like 7-1, right? No, it wasn't that low. Was he second choice? Where'd it go? Oh my God!
I caught you there.
No, I got so much paper on my desk. It's just preposterous.
I mock JK when he does that to me, so I have to.
Here it is.
I have to take a mea culpa.
I've got all the sale. I had it sitting loose on top for 2 days, but then I put it back in the stack. He ended up at 11-2, 560.
Yeah, and that's pretty even for somebody
second
who likes
choice.
It, pretty
second
extreme.
Choice. Yep, yeah. That was over the top. Well, it, you know, when you had horses like Signal Man, 20-1, and even Everfast, the 29-1, and don't forget these are win, you know, these are the win prices, but they're, you know, when you look at what $32 as a place price, $32 place, $14.40 for Everfast, and when you look at the exotics, when you look at the Exacta paid $473. The Tri for a buck paid $4,700. So Everfast was an appropriate price in the exotic pool speed.
Yep.
It was only in the wind pool that he was bizarrely low.
That is a phenomenon we've seen so much more so, I feel like, in the last 10 years in the Triple Crown races,
right,
where you see horses that should be 100. Nobody is, at that end of the odds spectrum, nobody's the price that they should be. And, I mean, I guess it just, I mean, I'm no economist. We'll ask Marshall Graham. But when you have a flow, I think liquidity must have something to do with it. It's just a fad in the odds from some more, people betting colors, numbers, whatever. Like, maybe it's actually enough on these triple days with these huge crowds that, and maybe the amount of money that it takes at that the odd spectrum to push it down like that is low enough that's the explanation is as simple as that. But I'd like to hear somebody who knows what they're talking about sound off on that. It is, but it's definitely a thing.
Well, just looking at here, let's what was the mutual pool, $21.7 million,
yeah.
and so, it's easy to those numbers can be figured out, and Marshall or Andy Serling, good candidates for that. The Exacta pool, almost $12 million. Tri pool, $13 million. The super pool, $6.8 million. High five pool was $475,000, and the best tweet of the day was later on in the evening, or maybe it was Sunday morning, when Marshall tweeted, "Boy, instead of taking pictures of War of Will and Mark Cassie, I should have been handicapping the 14th so that I could have gone after that $500,000 positive expectation super high five in the nightcap."
That is amazing. And a race I didn't even look at. I'm heading back for the bus at that point, and it did make me kick myself. Right? When these opportunities arise as horse players, duty bound to take advantage of them, and I for one dropped the ball on that. But I love those tweets that Marshall sends out, whether it's about those positive expectations, or you were talking before about the imputed odds from pools like the Black Eyed Susan to Preakness Pot. If you're not already following at Truxton Stables, what are you waiting for?
Well, what else from Baltimore? Talk anything else that transpired before we look at any news from the contest?
I had a food item that might have changed my life on Saturday night, Steve.
Where?
A new place called Gypsy's Truckstaurant. This started off as a food truck and is now a brick-and-mortar location. Very hip space in Hampton. And they had – I tweeted about this and got a lot of reaction to it, so I think the listeners might be interested. It was a crab – they call it a crab cone. It's basically – I guess it makes sense. It evolved out of the food truck setting, a way that you can – eat a crab cake mobile. Waffle cone with fries, crab cake on top. It sent me, I was very happy on that. On my red eye bus ride home, I was very happy. Really cool spot, lots of good eating and drinking options, and super nice people. I would highly check it out. I highly recommend checking it out if you're in the Mid-Atlantic area anytime soon.
I like it. Give it again in Hampton.
In Hampton, it's Gypsy's Truckstaurant.
Gypsy's Truckstaurant. Hmm. Very clever. And it's funny, I after Santa Anita Derby, actually had a similar experience with a burger in Alhambra from a place that started out as a truck, as a food truck.
If
absolutely.
That's the thing. You're getting, like, top-level chefs around the country who've started their careers doing the trucks thing. And our friend Leo Vukmanovich has suggested if you decide you get tired of this whole radio thing, you have a real shot to get elected as the mayor of Alhambra, so keep that in mind.
Well, I'd have to bone up on my Asian language skills, I think, to carry most of Alhambra. I don't know if that
lots of good Asian food out there. TV out there, that's for sure.
Oh, it's unbelievable. There's a lot of good everything, and of course, led by the engine on the train is Fosselman's. The dessert it leads the very frequently I'll stop at Fosselman's first and then go eat. Or there'll be the occasional two stops. There'll be the because when you get off the air at 9 a.m. in California, then what? You know, now I've already, you know, it's already midday for me mentally. So I, by 11
that's
o'clock,
you have the whole day to eat your way across
exactly.
Real Valley.
too funny.
I was sad to not be there this weekend. It was great to be in Baltimore, and I wouldn't have traded the experience, but I think it was the last 5 years I'd watched the Preakness from Santa Anita. So this year I was not able to be there for the Santa Anita Preakness Challenge, which ended up being sort of – this is how we Ultimate Betting Challenge a few months ago, so they sort of incorporated the two events and had racing from Pimlico and from Gulfstream and, of course, from Santa Anita. And the winner is a pretty good story, Alan Schaefer, just a guy I feel like a particularly deserving winner because he's made some really good contributions, great contest player, but also made some great contributions to the contest world in that he is one of that crew along with Lauren Weiss and Ray Arsenault and Ross Gallo, who got the Pegasus contest off the ground with its player-friendly terms. So I thought it was good karma to see Alan Schaefer at the top of that leaderboard. He ran his bankroll up to over $15,000, won $20,000 in purse, a BCBC seat, an NHC seat, and a Pegasus seat, plus a $5,000 bonus for playing on track. So a pretty impressive total haul for Alan. And I heard a rumor I might be getting a call from Woodbine to do a little write up about him. And he's one of those players. When I was writing for DRF all the time about contests, I'd have a list of people I wanted to talk about that I'd never fully gotten to profile yet, and he was on that list, so I'm hoping that's going to happen. And some other great stories out there, too. Chuck Grubbs, another big day. He
Amazing.
Ended second with a bankroll of $12,348. For that, he got $10,500, and he wins his entry to the BCBC, where he'll look to go back-to-back. Florine Sima, we were talking about Leo before. Leo's buddy Florine sits next to him right there in the Eddie Logan suite, ends up third with over $8,500 and a Pegasus seat. A name I don't know, Gregory Calawag, was fourth, $6,400 in bankroll, wins an additional $6,500 and a BCBC, and then running fifth, an old friend, Ryan Flanders, who, with his $6,000, that got him an additional $4,500 and also that coveted Pegasus seat. So they had a pretty good event out there, it sounded like, and I was sad to miss that.
Well, coming up this week as well, on Friday, you got a $75 this is worth noting at Horse Players, $75 for two seats, and then on Saturday, two seats at Horse Tourneys, and Memorial Day. Is Memorial Day? It's Monday, right?
Yes, it is.
Am I losing track of?
No.
This has got to be almost as early as you're ever going to get one, right? The 27th. Very
hard.
It's early.
The way the calendar tilts, it's a weird schedule.
Yeah, Lone Star has got their Stars of Texas series, the free qualifier at Lone Star on track Memorial Day, and Horse Players has got two seats for $1.25 to play in. So a couple of kind of quiet, and then as we look, frankly, toward June, things start to really heat up, including some of the on-sites, and Belmont is going to be a lot of fun.
Monmouth Pick Your Prize is one that's going to that'll be the biggest field. And actually, I'm so glad that came up because heads up to listeners, that one closes early. I think it might even close Memorial Day because Brian Skirka, who's going to be a guest on the In the Money show this week, wants to get the prize pool exactly established because of the unique gimmick of that where you literally pick your prize on the board. So if you have an opportunity to travel to Monmouth, that's the week before, the Saturday before Belmont. So is that going to be June 1st this year?
Yes.
That it's certainly that weekend. if you have the opportunity to play in this contest, you want to do it and don't get caught out. You want to sign up early because there's no walk-ups for that one, unfortunately. So get in touch with Brian Skirka at Monmouth if you want to participate in the Pick Your Prize event. And then I presume I'll be writing something for NYRA, as I've done for their last couple of contests, about the big Belmont Stakes Challenge, that one being a $10,000 buy-in event. Monmouth Pick Your Prize is a $2,000 event. And I know there are some players who come in, play in the Monmouth event, stick around for the various festivities Belmont Week, and then participate in that one as well. So that'll be the focus of a lot of the contest world. There are a couple events, as you mentioned, this weekend, but really things start to heat up as we get into June.
Well, and Belmont, you know, there is the 2 days, four seats both days, Friday and Saturday. So when it comes to Belmont Stakes Challenge and 7th and 8th, mark that. And as Pete mentions, that $2,000 Pick Your Prize, 20 seats total? I think 20 seats.
And that feels right. And you'll have double qualifiers and things, sometimes you have the 23rd or 24th person still getting an NHC seat. Honestly, if you care about the NHC experience as we do, that is one of the best places because you could basically double up and get. I mean, I'm pretty sure you double up, you're going to be able to get an NHC spot. There's really very few places that are going to have that kind of ratio and those kind of that kind of opportunity to make it to Vegas. So I really highly recommend it. Unfortunately, another contest I'm going to miss, but I have an excellent reason. My brother's getting married in Italy, so I'm flying out this weekend and will be staying through next. So I will not get to be there this year, which is a total bummer. I got to perfect this whole being in two places at once thing, Steve, and then I'll really have the world as my oyster. But I will be back, of course, for Belmont Week and be around for that challenge and hopefully get to see a lot of listeners and a lot of contest players. Should be a lot of fun.
No doubt. Second part of the Monmouth action on Sunday, too, for those that are going to spend the whole weekend.
That's right. They've added the Sunday contest as well, which is great. If you're traveling, it's nice to have two opportunities. Certainly no shortage of places to eat and drink around Monmouth. I haven't been to this Grotto restaurant yet, but I'm hearing good things. I've just mentioned my brother. Yeah. He works in Italian wine. That's one of the reasons why the wedding's going to be over in Italy, and I was buoyed to hear that Blue Grotto is a client of his. Usually places that are smart enough to have his wine, the Michael Skernick Italian selections, on the list I count on them to be of a certain quality, and I'm sure Blue Grotto is. And that would probably be my Saturday night dinner choice if I were doing both of those contests at Monmouth. Stay right there.
Well, between your brother and Johnny D's wife, Gail, who I guess we put them together, they've got the New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia market cornered with quality wine selections. That's pretty funny. I love it.
There's so much good stuff, and it does seem like a lot of fun, a lot of hard work, and a lot of stuff you got to deal with. But pretty cool. Some of the places he gets to go on the regular, and some of these great friends he's made around the world. I look forward to hanging out with them in Italy next week. It's gonna be great.
That'll be nice.
A great
time. Where in Italy? Where in Italy?
Oh, it's in Piedmont.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right, wow, right in Monforte, which is right near the town of Barolo. So, and funny enough, obviously there'll be a lot of wine on the menu, but there's kind of a craft beer explosion in northern Italy as well. So I want to check out some of those places. I got to brush up on my Italian a little bit in the next. I meant to do a whole Babel course and really prepare properly for this, Steve. That kind of went out the window, but I still have a few days. I took a few years of Italian. I'm hoping it comes back to me when I flip through a phrase book or something, and I can talk to some of these people.
Well, the Piedmont is a, as always happens in Italy, there's always sort of the region of the moment that gets its time in the sun as people discover all the various all the various great places to eat, drink, stay, and visit in Italy. Piedmont, very cool. Nice. Now, Pete, will we talk? Are we going to talk next week?
I think we'll still try to check in next week about, you know, we'll talk one more time about the stuff coming up, and we'll recap what happened this weekend. I am planning on, I mean, I'm taking on a limited schedule, but I am planning on working. But after having, especially having missed a recent appearance, I don't want to miss another one. I think we should try to check in next week. It'll be nice. It'll be the middle of the afternoon. Perhaps I'll have a glass of wine in hand, and we can go over everything happening in the world of contests and beyond.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, Looms Boldly, and the In the Money podcast, and so much more. Always fun. Pete, glad you had a great time, and got to catch up with Marshall. I got to get Marshall on to talk about the experience, without a doubt. I heard from so many partners. They were just so tickled. It was an unexpected delight for all of them, and certainly the horse acquitted himself well and has got lots to look forward to. Thanks.
Marshall and Clay Sanders, always great interviews. I've had them both recently on the show. And, I would say get them talking as much as possible.
Pete Fornatel, folks. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We've got a couple of different things. We've got Bill Downs. We've got to catch up with the Indiana action. And there are a couple of stakes, actually, today at Indiana. They're the Indiana Sire type series. But there's also an excellent third race, a first level allowance that I thought is worth looking at. And, you know, Bill, we didn't get a chance to talk to him during the Triple Crown period. So we'll catch up and do a little Indiana Grand. We're going to catch up, of course, with Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Lots to talk about with Sid. Stay with us, heading toward hour two here on At the Races.